Springtime is finally here, and I know I'm definitely thankful for the end of freezing weather. People associate spring with a variety of things, the most notable being Easter, light pastel colors, and flowers. Flowers and ornamental plants have been things of great importance for centuries. The ancient Greeks believed that flowers were a gift from the gods, that they brought great joy. The ancient Egyptians left flowers in their tombs for the dead. In the Victorian age, there was a great flourishing of floriography and books containing analysis of flowers and their symbolism. Even today, flowers and ornamental plants carry great importance. When you want to show love to someone, what do? You give them flowers. When you want to give a message of sympathy after someone passes on, what do? You send flowers. What do kids do in their yards when they want to give a gift to their parents? They pick flowers. But have you ever stopped to think about the work that goes into the harvest of these plants? How about the local growers that sell flowers wrapped in brown paper? How do they grow their crop? This brings us to the topic of this episode, ornamental horticulture and floriculture. Hello and welcome to episode 4 of A Day in Agriculture. April showers bring May flowers. However, today, seeing as it is the end of April and everything's beginning to bloom, I thought this would be an appropriate topic for the time of year. In today's episode, we're going to explore the different technologies involved with horticulture, the importance of these farms, and how production in this branch of agriculture works with our guest, Miss Dina Sublett. The Encyclopedia Britannica defines horticulture as the branch of plant agriculture dealing with garden crops, generally fruit, vegetables, and ornamental plants. Today, we're going to be focusing on the two branches of horticulture that deal with ornamental plants, although it is good to note that there are two additional branches that focus on plants grown for food. My mom every year always does a large garden. This garden on the flower side usually consists of multiple varieties of zinnias, sunflowers, and other small houseplants she cares for around the house that aren't in the garden. Horticulture and floriculture aren't to be confused with this. It's its own branch of agriculture, just as intensive as row cropping and other commercial forms of ag. The farmers that make their livings off of this branch depend on good weather, fertilizers, and extreme care to take care of their plants. In general, plants that produce fruit or flowers tend to be more sensitive and needy than more hardy plants. In order to encourage proper growing conditions and fewer risks with cold weather, pests, and water, many horticulturalists use greenhouses in their practices. Greenhouses, although impractical for some plants, create opportunities for more efficient and less risky growing. As mentioned earlier, they really mediate pest risk and have an easier sustained irrigation system. The multiple different types of greenhouses really allow for optimal crop production in ornamentals and horticulture as a whole. They also allow growing seasons to be partially manipulated. So, for example, you can make sure that the plants people want to buy for their gardens in the spring are ready to go despite possible frosts and cold weather. In the past couple of decades, there has been numerous new innovations in this industry that have really affected horticulture as a whole. One of these that interests me personally is hydroponics. This is the process of growing plants in a water-based nutrient solution as opposed to soil. Hydroponics isn't necessarily a new idea, but it's definitely taken off in the past couple of years. Another one of these innovations is drying beads. This leads to better seed quality and higher germination rates for the producer. In 2019, U.S. horticulture operations reported $13.8 billion in sales, with over 20,000 farms and businesses operating in the industry. This number will only go up in the future with many new agriculturalists joining in. Horticulture is very important to the agricultural industry as a whole, and the United States, providing numerous jobs and beautiful ornamentals for our nation. This brings us to our guest, Miss Dina Sublett. Miss Sublett grew up on a farm and graduated from Auburn University with a Bachelor's of Science in Agronomy and Soil. Since 2006, she's operated a row crop farm with her father and first cousin. During the pandemic, Ms. Sublett discovered that the U.S. imported 82% of fresh flowers, and a light went off. A big supporter of domestically grown products, she decided she would do something different. This is where she began developing the business plans for her operation, the Flowering Ranch, a 190-acre farm in Madison County, Alabama. Her farm specializes in growing premium cut flowers for florists and wholesalers. Her farm boasts one of the most diverse collections of peonies in the Southeast. So, to start us off, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to be our guest.
Well, thank you, Jessa, for inviting me. This is my very, very first time on a podcast, and it's exciting to get to do this. So thank you for asking me to do it.
Yes, ma'am. I'm so thankful that you could do it, and I'm excited for this episode.
Thank you. Me too.
So first, for our first question, Ms. Sublett, I just wanted to ask, I know you mentioned gaining a degree in agronomy and soils, and then you started working on your family farm. Would you mind kind of walking us through how this led to the creation of the Flowering Ranch and kind of your horticulture business?
Okay, sure. I graduated with your dad, actually, in 2003 from Auburn. Your dad and I were good friends all through school, and we learned a lot together and went on some good soil judging trips. And there's nothing to make somebody feel any older than a person, somebody you went to college is with, child calling asking you to be on a podcast. I'm so happy to be here, and I really am excited to talk with you today about something that I've become really passionate about. After I graduated from Auburn in 2003, I worked for 3 years with the USDA and the Natural Resources Conservation Service. I was a soil conservationist in Guntersville, and then later on went to Scottsboro. Working with the government there those 3 years, it was getting to the point where I felt like we were spending more and more time in the office behind the computer writing these contracts, and I wasn't really being able to get out in the field and enjoy the part where what I liked the most was talking and working with the farmers. My dad had always presented me with the opportunity to come back to the farm anytime I wanted to, and at that point I was ready to do that. So I came back to the farm in the spring of 2006. That was my very first crop to put in. I planted cotton on a farm that he rented me. At that time, it was my dad and my uncle and my uncle's two sons and my two first cousins. So there were five of us there working together, and we were raising corn, cotton, wheat, and soybeans, kind of the typical row crop mix that folks here in North Alabama and Southern Tennessee raise. That went great. I loved working with my family. For the most part, we all got along great, and I just cherish so many of those times that, you know, you work hard, but you are able to be with your family and laugh and cut up, and if you ever get the opportunity to work with your family side by side in a day by day situation, then it's a business you want to be in. It's something that I definitely encourage people to do, because there is nothing like it. But during that time, of course, we were raising those four crops that I talked about, which is, you know, a typical mixer here. I just had always in the back of my mind wanted to raise a crop that was different from anything else. And I wheeled a lot of different things around, but I just never could quite put my finger on it. So I kept doing what I was doing and all that time until the pandemic hit in the spring of 2020. And there's only so much TV you can watch and so many games you can go out and play with your kids and all that. So I guess I had too much time to sit around and think and read. And so that led to a lot of reading into floriculture. And I came up with where I was going to plant peonies. I don't really have a cool story about, like, there's nostalgic peonies being a nostalgic flower for me. I didn't have them in my grandma's yard, and I go out there in the spring and smell them. I don't have a cool story about that, unfortunately. Maybe I should make one up. It might sound a lot cooler, but I did come across the readings in my readings about the peonies, and several things about those caught my attention. One is that they are perennial. and they're productive for 20 to 30 years from one planting of them, and possibly even longer if you want to keep them. I think they, many people say after about that time you want to dig them up and divide them to keep them real vigorous, but you could definitely even keep them in the ground longer than that. So, you know, that is one thing. You look at an initial investment and you're looking at planting something one time and being able to harvest 20 to 30 years off of it, you know, that's pretty attractive. Second thing that drew me to peonies were that they grew well here without a lot of fuss. There's not really any many bugs that bother them. You don't have to worry about that. The hardest part is keeping the weeds out of them and giving them some fungicide treatments in the spring. And the third thing that kind of drew me to them is that they are a higher value cut flower that demand a higher price at the florist and at the wholesalers. So anytime you can make more money, that's always a good thing. That's the objective behind this. So I decided on the found the peonies to be that's what I wanted to do. And so I didn't know anything about peonies. My husband didn't know anything about peonies. He's a farmer too, but my family didn't. So there's nobody around here growing them. So I went to North Carolina, where there are several large farms over there. In fact, the largest peony growing farm in the United States is in North Carolina. Terracea Farms. He has 160 acres of peonies, and that's a lot in the,
wow.
in the horticulture world, you know, of anything. And he was kind enough to talk with me, and we rolled several things around there that day. And after doing all that, doing some research, I decided to go ahead and order the roots, bare roots. Ordered 4,200, and those were planted in the fall of 2020. I was trying to pick cotton and get peony roots planted and juggle everything else, and a kindergartner at the time. That fall about killed me, but I had two really good employees that helped me out, and we got it done. So from there, once you kind of fall into reading into all the floriculture world and everything, you see all the other beautiful flowers that people are growing, you know, ranunculus and anemone and campanula and all the cool natives that you can do. And I'm like, oh, well, I want to do that too. So what came from just going from peonies like led to where I am now, where we've got about 2 acres in production, and I've got 3 greenhouses that we're raising things in. And then last fall, we also added about another 1,200 peony plants. So that puts us at about 5,500.
Wow. It sounds like you've really grown your operation from the beginning, especially in such a short time, too. I know I was looking at your website, and it looked pretty awesome.
Well, the website needs some work. That was one thing when we, you know, you first start out. I hired a girl to do it because I certainly don't know anything about website design.
Yes, ma'am.
I said let's start with these things. And since she has set that up for me, the business model has changed quite a bit. I didn't know when I first started really what direction I wanted these flowers to go in. Was I going to concentrate on retail? Did I want to concentrate on wholesale? Maybe somewhere in the middle. As time has gone on, I have realized that I personally would rather grow more in bulk and in volume and move those through non-retail ways. Not, in other words, to a wholesaler or direct to a florist. For me, it's much easier to grow all these things or grow what the florists and the wholesalers want and deal with a handful of people rather than try to sell retail at a farmer's market and through CSAs and all that and have to sell to 500 people, if that makes sense.
Yes, ma'am.
So that things have kind of changed since the website has been published, and I actually saw the girl that worked on that for me a couple weeks ago, and I said, "We're due to update this thing," so that's coming.
Yes, ma'am.
But things have definitely grown much faster than I ever anticipated. I think that at least here in the Huntsville area, there's a need and a desire for some of these flowers that I'm growing. Some of these flowers had never been grown here by any of the local flower farmers, and so it has been very well received, and I've been blessed with great customers and a lot of support from the local floral industry here.
Yes, ma'am. So I know you mentioned that you're doing the peonies, and you have a bunch of different types of plants too, and then mm-hmm. I'm sure you have your florist side where you're selling to these people, and I'm sure there's a lot of different layers in what you're doing. So what would, like, a typical day on the job look like for you, even if there is no typical day?
that's farming, right? There
yes,
is
ma'am.
No typical day. But I'd say, you know, a typical day begins with me and my crew. I have two time employees. We will harvest flowers, whatever flowers are ready that morning. We like to harvest in the morning after the plants have taken up water and have rested overnight. They're still nice and turgid. That's the first thing we do every morning is go and cut everything that's ready to be harvested. We take those into the barn that we've got there. We process those. Each flower gets a different processing method, and we store a bunch and store those. I've got two walk-in coolers, and so we store them there. You know, sometimes that harvesting, it might take till lunchtime, and then sometimes we might be done by 9 o'clock. It just depends on, you know, really where we're at in the season. And then what we do after that depends also, you know, where we're at. Is it January where we are just at that point, you know, just kind of managing what's going on in the greenhouses? Or is it in May where we're starting warm summer annuals, weeding, spraying for bugs, cut peonies twice a day, pulling tulips? So, you know, every day is different, and it's all, you know, like I said, based upon what time of year we're in. I would say our peak times for flowers, that peak harvest times, we shoot to have a big glut come in mid-March through mid-May. That captures your spring wedding season, graduations, proms. People get excited because you're coming out of winter, so they're hungry, ready for flowers. That's the big chunk there. And then we also try to have another big chunk come in August through like October up until first frost. You get into August, people are back from vacations. The wedding seasons seem to be picking up some in August. So you've got August, September, October, and sometimes first of November if we don't get a frost early, that we're harvesting a lot of flowers for events there. Some of the crops that we're growing, we have to cut two or three times a day. Any tulips, peonies, sunflowers, those have to be gone out and captured two or three times a day so that we get them in the right stage for our end customer to be able to use them and present them to the final consumer there. After cutting, we maybe clean up the farm. It seems like there's always weeds to be pulled. Always weeds. I swear you can weed the greenhouse, and then the next day you go in there and it's like, where did all this come from? Because we just had this thing clean. that part never ends. And we may be starting seeds. We may be planting some little seedlings that, you know, that we've started. I do order a lot of plugs in. Some seeds we're good at, and then some seeds it pays to have people that really, really know what they're doing to start those for you. So we order in and also do some of our own. We may be taking cuttings off mother plants to propagate some of our own things. That's a lot of what I'm doing right now. In between peony cuttings, I'm taking cuttings off mums and dahlias for flowers for later on into the fall. Summer, we are typically usually a little more lax due to the decreased demand. four flowers in the summer. It's hot. People are going on vacation. And, you know, typically a lot of your summer flowers are the ones that a lot of people can grow in their backyard anyway. Zinnias, celosias, sunflowers. I've tried not really to necessarily make summer stuff my focus. We, like I said, we try to focus more on the shoulder seasons, spring and fall. Fall is probably the busiest time for us. You've got the increased wedding and events going on, and then we're cutting flowers for all that. And then we also are prepping the greenhouses as soon as we get that last crop cut out of there for next year's spring flowers. So I'd like to be cutting flowers again by late January in order to meet Valentine's Day. So in order for us to be able to have that, all that stuff has got to be planted in the fall. So fall gets real crazy. It's funny because that falls into the typical farmer production, row crop farmer's schedule too. Real busy in the spring and real busy in the fall. So like I said, no typical day, but that's a little bit of rundown of what might go on.
Yes, ma'am. Sounds like y'all got a lot of moving parts.
Yeah, and it makes me crazy all the time. It's like every morning I'm like, okay, let me make a list. What do we need to get accomplished today, and what can wait, and who's going to do this, and who's going to do that, and what can we realistically get done today? So.
Yes, ma'am. I see that on our farm lot, too. Kind of make a list, and if you get about half of it done, it's a very mm-hmm. successful day.
That's right, and that other half gets moved to tomorrow, and then you hope by the end of the week you can at least scratch it all off. That's the objective.
Yes, ma'am.
Yep.
So I'm sure with all these moving parts and the different seasons kind of working together, there's got to be a couple issues that kind of come up, like they do on mm-hmm. any operation, really. What would you mm-hmm. say are some of the biggest challenges you face in operating your business?
Well, coming from my background where, you know, I was raising the row crops, you can take after we would harvest corn in September and October, we would take that grain to the grain bin and store it. And you could wait until you were happy with the price with it to sell it if you wanted to. Same thing, you know, with the soybeans. You can keep soybeans in the bin for 1 to 2 years if you can stand it and want to wait around on the price because bugs don't bother them. However, when you're dealing with like these flower crops, they're perishable. They've got to be sold and moved within a week, typically. Some you can hold maybe 10 days, but most of them have to go out the door in a very short time frame. So the marketing of these things has been a challenge. Learning how many do you anticipate to cut next week, and how can you convey that to my customer, what I'm going to have in the next 2 weeks. That part has been challenging. And then you can do your best guess, but then what if you get a cold snap and things don't turn out right? You know, I always just try to make sure my end customer understands at the end of the day, it's still farming. We're very much tied to the weather. There's not a lot of resources in some of these particular flowers about how many stems am I going to get out of one ranunculus plant. So that's kind of something also that I've just had to kind of, that's come with experience, is learning how soon they come on, how much I can expect out of a greenhouse bed of ranunculus, and trying, you know, penciling out profit and law, profit margin on things like that. So, but I would say the biggest challenge is probably the marketing of things and making sure that stuff doesn't sit in there too long, because if it sits in there too long, I can't sell it to somebody that might have to have it in their cooler 3 or 4 days before it goes out to a customer's bouquet that they want to sell to, and it needs to look good for a week, you know, on their kitchen table. So the stuff has to really have a quick turnover at my place, and you got to have your markets ready and ready to take that.
Yes, ma'am. So it moves a lot quicker than just like your stereotypical production agriculture, it sounds like. Because like you
Right,
said, I
yeah.
know you really can hold a lot of it. And if you keep up with the markets, you can wait until you get a good price. But flowers, you're right, are pretty perishable.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lot like vegetables. You know, the vegetable men and women, they have to move that stuff out fast because nobody wants rotten squash when nobody wants brown flowers either. So,
Yes, ma'am.
you know, the cotton, when we would raise cotton, or with my husband's still raising cotton, and my dad and family are too. You know, after the picker rolls that up in the roll and it goes to the gin, you know, you don't ever see that. We've got marketing associations that take care of that, and that, you know, that's the end of it. They grade it and all that. So this is trying to get it moved and figuring out where it's going to go has been hard. And like I said, I've been blessed in that the community and here in Huntsville, and I do send stuff up towards Nashville and down to Birmingham too, that at least that the area here has been real receptive to what I'm doing.
Yes, ma'am. And I bet that cold snap too has probably impacted you a bit this year. I know,
goodness.
2 weeks ago, and my mom has some peonies in our backyard, and we don't think they made it.
Well, yeah, I know it didn't kill the plants, but likely what it did to your mother's and what it did to, I would say, 2/3 of mine this year, is it damaged the buds enough where they either died off, or what is still left on the plant is going to be misshapen or deformed where it's not aesthetically pleasing and not something that I can market. Now, I went from production agriculture where, you know, you want to grow as many bushels of corn per acre as you can, you know, while still maintaining a decent quality, to a part of agriculture where I'm selling aesthetics. And that cold snap really, really did a number on the peonies. And so this was the third spring that since these peonies have been planted. And this is kind of the year that they recommend, you know, you can begin to harvest some, because those first couple of years you want to let those things establish, you know, get a good root system and all that. So it's not recommended to do any harvesting those first 2 years. The third year you can begin to selectively harvest a few stems. Years 4 and 5, they, you know, you call it, you'd say they were in adulthood, as you might say, and they, you can begin to harvest from there into your, you know, 20 and 30 year mark. This third year I was calling these plants late teenagers. You know, you're
yes,
16
ma'am.
Years old and you've hit the ground running, you're feeling good, but you're just not quite an adult yet. So I was really looking forward to being able to have a lot and practice getting these things shipped across the country to some different florist friends that I've made all around the United States, and God had other plans. And so we're taking this year as just as another year of really trying to keep the plants healthy, keeping a lot, as much of the leaf on there as we can, so that it will in turn feed the roots this summer to make even more big productive plants for next year. We will be able to salvage, I think, a few stems off of the later maturing varieties, some that weren't quite up as much up out of the ground at the time that big freeze came mid-March. We got to 18 degrees 3 nights in a row, and anything that was just too developed, it just really, really messed it up. So anyway, I'm trying to look on the bright side of things, and but we were able to cut some today, and I think that we're going to have some of these later maturing varieties going to be okay. So there's always a bright side to it, and I'm trying to find that. Although if you'd asked me a month ago, I'd have been a little bit more bad news bear.
With like all of agriculture, I'm sure just bad years and good years, and who knows, this year still could work out to be a pretty good year. You never know.
It could, and then it could also continue to be a total bust like it has been. You know, I, I, we, I, The first 2 years I had such good years, you know, you figure at some point, you know, you're due for a bad one. And between that really, really cold snap that we had back at Christmas time, that killed a lot of the plants that we had planted last fall that typically overwinter here just fine. But it got those. So we're short on flowers this spring. It just, and I hate it, but there's just absolutely nothing I can do about it. I was recovering from a foot surgery back during that cold snap at Christmas time and was not even really able to get out and cover them up like I would have liked to have had done. They were covered somewhat as best I could do. But they just didn't make it. So we're taking this extra time this spring, like I said, to just kind of do a good job with getting summer stuff, summer annuals ready, clean up the farm, and establish some new perennials. So just trying to do the best with the hand we've been given this time.
Yes, ma'am. So with all of this building off, like you said, covering the plants, making sure everything's going according to plan, and dealing with the challenges that you face, what are some new technologies that maybe you're using on your farm or you've heard of or you think that could be in development that could really help Florida culture as a whole?
Well, I'm relatively new to this industry, so I don't know that there's I don't know that I'm all that familiar with enough to really even say here's how far it's come, you know, in this time period. I know that they are always working on new plant varieties and improving the breeding and the characteristics of lots of these plants to make better cut flowers. So I'm sure that they always coming up with new colors and characteristics that are more desirable for the industry. I have greenhouses that I'm growing in. None of them are really super high tech. Probably the coolest thing that I like about them is that, well, I don't live on the farm where I'm growing the flowers. We live about 10 or 15 minutes away. So inside those greenhouses, it's really easy on a sunny morning for the temperature to shoot up real high. I mean, it can get to be 90 degrees in there real quick if you're not up and on your P's and Q's. So I have my greenhouses set up on automation where they're thermostat controlled. So if I want to go in and say on the panel, I want the curtains to start opening at 70 degrees, I can do that. So in the morning, that I don't have to race out there on Saturday or Sunday morning and get them open so that it doesn't get too hot in there. And then also the same thing in the evening, like, okay, I want it to maintain, you know, 55 degrees in here at night. Well, then I can say, all right, well, let me start closing the curtains at 60 degrees in the evenings. And so that part is super nice for me, especially since, you know, I don't live on the farm and it doesn't keep us married, if you will, you know, to opening and closing curtains and running fans and things like that all the time. I do wish that they would have put a little more effort into maybe developing some herbicides that would help us in controlling weeds. But a lot of, you know, most of your chemical research goes into the main row crops. And, you know, and it's understandable because that's where most of the acres in the United States are focused on, but it would be very nice to have to have some herbicides that we could spray over these flowers that would get weeds. But until then, we pulling them by hand and using and using cloth to plant into the holes to keep that under control.
Yes, ma'am. So for my final question, to just kind of wrap it up real quick. What advice would you give to somebody that's wanting to pursue a career in that branch of agriculture or maybe start their own business working with flowers?
I would say start out small. Don't, even though that's not what I did, but going back now, I would say to start out small and really, and maybe get a feel of what your market wants. It would really be crappy to have a whole bunch of flowers that you have worked and sweated over and prayed over and toiled over and not have anywhere for them to go. So start out small, see, and figure out what avenue, you know, you want to take. Is it, you want to go to the farmer's market and, you know, and talk to all the lovely people that's out here in the world that swoons over your flowers? Or are you more like me where you just want to grow it and, you know, let somebody else deal with that part? And different people have different personalities, and mine is I would rather, you know, grow and let somebody else do most of the marketing as far as that, on that side of things. If you're going to get into horticulture, you know, into this floriculture world, I would really recommend you starting out with learning about soils. At the end of the day, all plants are tied back to the soil and water. You need to know about soil fertility, how these plants take up the nutrients, what nutrients they need and in what quantities. That includes, you know, your pH with lime, and your fertilizers. Also, you need to learn about irrigation and water movement and how that affects plants. Some plants like a lot of water. Some plants don't want a lot of water. You need to understand how your soil or wherever you're going to plant this stuff, how does it drain? Is it going to be too wet over the winter to, produce good stuff? Is it going to be too wet in the summer? Is it going to be too dry in the summer? So it would be a real good idea before you just went willy-nilly to have an idea of soil fertility, read up on that, and maybe water management, and to know your market.
Yes, ma'am. That's some really good advice. Starting off small, like you said, I feel like that's something that can also kind of be applied to anything. Like, I know me, I'm really bad about, if I do something, I'm like, oh, I'm going to dive all in and do all of this.
Mm-hmm.
When really it's just beneficial to take it slow and make sure that you know what you're doing and you have a good background first.
That's right. And that very first year, I did kind of start small with some stuff here in my backyard, just kind of playing around with some things. And I learned a lot that year about, yeah, even though the book you read says it can be done this way, well, maybe it can in Michigan or wherever it was this book was written, but in Alabama, it's not exactly how it worked out.
Yes, ma'am.
And that's further complicated by every year it can be different too. So the weather conditions between, say, this March and last March were totally different. So
yes, ma'am. That crazy Alabama weather.
That's right. And I guess it's probably crazy everywhere. But
true.
everybody likes to complain about the weather, and especially farmers. And I'm gonna fall right in there with it.
Yes, ma'am. Well, I just want to say thank you so much for taking the time to be on my podcast. I really, really appreciate it. And I know I have learned a lot through talking with you, and I'm sure everybody that listens to this will as well.
Well, I hope so. I'm not the most eloquent person in the world, but I hope that I have illuminated some of the things that we are doing, and hope that everybody enjoys what I've talked about. And anytime anybody's got any questions about stuff in their yard, I don't claim to know all of it. I certainly don't. I learn every day, but I'm happy to talk to anybody about any burning questions.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you, Jessa. Enjoyed it very much.
Horticulture is a very important branch of agriculture in the United States that is constantly evolving to accommodate new practices, the consumer, and technologies. To keep up with The Flowering Ranch, I encourage you to go to their website, thefloweringranch.com, and follow them on Instagram and Facebook. I hope you've learned something new in this, the third episode of A Day in Agriculture. You can expect the next episode on May 25th and listen on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. To keep up with the latest updates about A Day in Agriculture, I encourage you to follow our Instagram at a.day.n.agriculture. www.agriculture.com. Thank you for listening. Sources used in this episode are as follows: Britannica, Horticulture; The Boar, A History of Flowers; Frontiers, Major Challenges Facing Commercial Horticulture; Texas A&M, Ornamental Greenhouse Management; and finally, USDA, Hydroponic and Horticulture Operations. If you would like access to the transcript of this episode or have any questions, contact adayinagriculture@gmail.com. Thank you for listening again, and you can expect the next episode on May 25th.